Thank you very much. It's great to be back, and I just want to state for the record that the class of 88-89 was by far the best class. The decision to write a book called Tough Choices and to write it myself, I did in fact write it myself, every word, no collaborator, no ghostwriter, for better or for worse. That decision first occurred to me about 5 years ago. I was sitting on the witness stand being cross-examined by a team of attorneys because having just received enough shareholder votes to complete the acquisition of Compaq Computer, we were sued one last time to try and stop it. And as I sat on that witness stand being questioned by these attorneys, it occurred to me that most people don't actually understand how a business operates. Because all of the questions that I was being asked really had to do with how you set goals and how you motivate people to achieve those goals and the fact that if you want to change products and profits, you have to change what people do every day. And so I decided 5 years ago that I would write a book about business from the point of view of what I find most fascinating, most challenging, most fun about business. And that is that it's all about the people. It's all about the people. Now, of course, you're Sloanies. So, you know, it's also really important. It's all about the numbers, absolutely. It's all about the technology, without a doubt. But only people can build products and produce numbers. And so I decided to write that book. Now, if you decide to read the book, which I of course hope that you will find that the first thing I deal with in this book, in the very first two pages, is the fact that I got fired. It was, of course, a hugely public event. It made headlines all over the world. It causes lots of people still to say, gosh, you failed. By the way, I don't think I failed. I do think I was fired. But we'll come to that in a moment. But I decided I had to start with that. Because if I could not deal with that most public of events in an authentic way, the reader wouldn't believe the rest of the book. And so I start with that. What happened and how I felt and how I got up the next day and went on. I do spend a chapter talking about my time at MIT because my time here made a big difference. And I want to just talk to you about three classes that I took here because they made a big impact on me. By the way, you know, I loved, actually maybe four classes. I took of course, operational research and learning about systems problems is what helped me understand the systemic nature of transformation that was required at Hewlett-Packard. When you learn about complex systems problems, you know that you cannot solve one of those problems by only acting on or understanding one or two parameters of the problem. You have to understand all the parameters of the problem and how they interact with one another. All transformation is a systems problem. And so for me, when I came to Hewlett-Packard, a company that was iconic, mythic, but also a company that was deeply troubled, a company that was lagging further and further behind, that no longer was even among the top 25 innovators in the world, a company that had missed 9 quarters in a row in the middle of the biggest technology upturn in history, and yet employees were receiving record bonuses. A company that was so in love with its past, it could not envision its future. I realized when I came to that company that this was a systems problem of deep complexity. And that if we were going to transform this company, it would not only take time, it would not only take the energy of tens of thousands of employees, but it would also take us working on the strategy of the firm, the structures and the processes of the firm, how we measured and rewarded performance, and as well what I would call the software of a company, the culture, the values, the behavior. I call culture the software of a company because, like a computer, the hardware won't work if the software isn't up to the task. And for all you, I'm sorry, quantitative types that think values and organizational behavior and culture and all that is just soft stuff, it is the hardest stuff. And it is the software of a firm. I took another really important course called Gaming Theory while I was here. Gaming theory to me was fascinating because, with all due respect to my very erudite teachers, Jake Jacoby taught that course. It was a great course. But to me, what gaming theory was an attempt by scientists to explain irrational decision-making in a rational framework. Not all decisions are rational. Not all decisions are scientifically based. Many people in business are overcome at times by their fears, their resentments, their rivalries, their agendas. It is part of life. And business is a collection of people working together. I started out as a secretary. I was a medieval history major and philosophy major at Stanford University. It was really interesting, but it would not pay the bills. I went on to law school and discovered very quickly that I hated law school. So I quit. And then I had to pay the bills. And I took the only job that I knew I could do that would pay my bills, and that was to be a secretary. Actually, secretary is a bit glorified. I was a receptionist. I sat in the front of a building, I typed, and I answered the phones. That was my job. I thought when I was a secretary that the people in the mailroom must be fundamentally different from the people in the boardroom. And what I've learned in the course of my life and my career and what this book is all about is that people are people, wherever you find them. There are people who will hold their positions with honor. There are people who will not. If you doubt that, all you have to do is think about the current scandal with backdating of stock options. Here you have people in some of the most respected companies in America who lost sight of good judgment and good ethics. They believed they could get away with something because there wasn't a clear rule that told them they couldn't. That's a breakdown in judgment and ethics. I knew from being a secretary and sitting in the mailroom that sometimes people stop talking directly with each other about the real issues, and when that happens, dysfunction occurs and bad things happen in a business. That happens all the way up the chain. People are people wherever you find them. And that gaming theory course, I found it fascinating. It was a whole set of quantitative science designed to try and explain how it is that people's personal agendas or emotions or fears can drive them to an irrational decision. And yet it happens all the time. And if you want to advance in business, you have to also understand people. I took a course in organizational behavior, and one of the important things that we had to do was role play a labor negotiation. Everybody went into this role play after a very intellectual conversation about how to bring two opposing groups together. Everyone knew intellectually that the only way to solve this very tough problem between management and labor was for both sides to feel as though their issues were at least recognized and hopefully addressed in some way. In other words, there had to be a win-win somewhere in there. Everyone knew this intellectually. We'd studied it. And yet, when people got into the role play, I watched how quickly people dissolved into win-lose with obvious consequences. People are people wherever you find them, and the number of advanced degrees someone has nothing to do with whether or not they have judgment or maturity or perspective or ethics. Which brings me perhaps to the most impactful course I took while I was here. And I talk a lot about this in the book. It was called Readings in Power and Responsibility. It was literature from throughout the ages. But it was also a set of compelling stories about who people are and how they behave. And that made a big impact on me. One of the most cogent pieces of career advice I ever gave was something I gave to one of my very first subordinates. And she was a young woman wrestling with a set of personal choices. She was an engineer. It was the 80s. She was trying to decide about the age-old work-life balance question. And I said to her, never sell your soul, because if you do, no one will pay you back. Now, that may seem like very touchy-feely advice for a bunch of hardcore scientists and engineers. But what I know about business and life is that there are many, many, many opportunities to lose your way. There are many opportunities to lose your way because you're overcome by greed. That's what the backdating stock option scandal is about. People have been overcome by greed. And they have forgotten the fundamentals about what's right and what's wrong. People can be overcome by their ambition. I'm going to do this because if I do this, I get the next job, or I save the job I have. People can be overcome by fear. I talk a lot about fear in this book because if you want to change what people are doing, you have to understand that people are afraid of change. Change is always resisted. It is human nature. Why is change resisted? Because people fear the unknown, and because the natural momentum of any institution is to preserve the status quo. Why? Because the status quo preserves the position of those who hold power. It is human nature that people who have power want to keep it. And so, any institution is focused on the preservation of the power of those who already have it. Human nature. If you want to transform something, as we had to transform a great company called Hewlett-Packard, you have to understand fear, you have to understand human motivation, and yeah, you got to understand the numbers. This book is about all those things. And I'm going to stop talking here in about 2 minutes so we have plenty of time for your questions. Now, one of the things that I believe is that change not only requires an understanding of human nature, change also requires clear-eyed realism. Change requires a deep understanding of what is wrong. So that means, for example, understanding all of the issues and articulating them to people. When I came to Hewlett-Packard in 1999, this was a company, as I mentioned, lagging further and further behind as measured in innovation, as measured in financial performance, as measured in competitive position, by every measure. HP was falling further and further behind, and it was also a company dissolving into what I called 1,000 tribes. We had 87 different business units. They all did their own thing. They all had their own brands in the market, 150 of them. Believe it or not, when I asked how many employees we had, no one could answer the question because there were 87 different IT systems and 87 different HR departments. Not very effective, but people were so possessive of their resources and their power. When you come in to transform a company, it is a leader's job to see things that others don't see. That is a leader's fundamental responsibility, to see things before others see them. A leader's most fundamental job is to sense danger and opportunity ahead of others and to act on it. And if you doubt that, think about the parable of Kodak and Hewlett-Packard. Kodak was a company that in 1999 sat on a huge pile of profit in a traditional photography business. Less than 5 years later, that business was drifting away because a new technology had transformed an entire industry. All of you have cell phones and you all take pictures with them. And that happened in about 5 years. And when Kodak finally announced, with all due respect to anyone who is here who works for Kodak, when Kodak finally announced, okay, we get it, we're going to now move to the new digital age, we're going to de-emphasize our traditional business, the market said, well, yeah, that's the right decision. Everybody accepted it. It was too late. And the Kodak brand may survive, but it's not clear the company will. On the other hand, when we undertook the merger with Compaq, very few people saw it. The fact that the technology industry maybe had to consolidate was viewed as heresy. The fact that scope and scale mattered, the fact that we could actually compete against Dell, the fact that maybe we could overcome IBM as the largest technology company in the world. By the way, these were all goals, all things that were said way back in 2001. They seemed like hubris, naivete. And yet, looking back now, it's clear the industry had to consolidate. It's clear that HP is competing against Dell and IBM. At the time that we announced the Compaq merger, I told the board of both companies, the stock will drop, HP stock will drop 20%. It dropped 23%. I was close. But my point being that sometimes a leader's job is to undertake the difficult job of transformation. And in this case, it was a great company worth saving. But it is a tough, painful process for everyone involved. And I accept that part of a transformation means that people who have lost their jobs, I laid off 36,000 people in my tenure. Those people don't like me. I understand that. I understand that part of what comes with leading transformation is people tend to focus their resentment and fear and anger on the person leading the change. But leadership is all about change. Management is about producing acceptable results within a known set of parameters. Management is a worthy profession, but it is not leadership. Leadership is about changing the order of things, seeing possibilities that others do not see. Some of you who may have heard me speak before know that I believe deeply that anyone can lead from any place at any time. Leadership is not about position. Leadership is not about how many degrees you have. Leadership is about a decision to make a positive difference and change the order of things. But leadership is both rewarding and difficult. My most important lesson, I'll stop here and take your questions, my most important lesson about leadership came when I was a secretary. I sat, typed, answered the phones. By the way, the building that I sat in was one block from Hewlett-Packard headquarters. How strange. About 6 months into that job, two men came to see me. Those two men said, you know, we think maybe you can do something else. We think maybe you can do something more. Would you like to help us write some deals? And that was my first introduction to the possibility that I might choose a career in business. What was the leadership lesson I learned that day? It is a leader's job to see possibilities in other people. It is a leader's job to see the possibilities in circumstances. Change requires realism, clear-eyed realism about where we are and what our problems and our risks are. But change requires a sense of possibility and optimism as well. Because optimism is the belief that things can get better. And optimists trust that people are willing to go along for the journey despite their fears. That day, those two men taught me that leaders see the possibilities in others and the possibilities in circumstances. And so I will close with my other set of career advice before I take your questions, which is, Don't spend all your time worrying about the next job. Do the job you have. Do it with passion, do it with commitment, do it with excellence, and do it with honor and integrity. Learn everything you can in the job you're doing. Focus on the possibilities. Where can you make a difference? Don't fixate on all the things you can't do. Focus on the things you can do. And if you do that, opportunity will knock. People will present you with opportunities to do more. When opportunity knocks, do not be afraid to answer. Do not be afraid to go outside your comfort zone, to try something new, to take a risk, maybe to make a mistake. It is what life and success are made of. I never had a plan to be a CEO. I never thought I would be a CEO. The first time it ever occurred to me that maybe I could be a CEO was when I graduated from Sloan. And probably because that's because I saw a lot of CEOs walk through here. And I discovered, watching all these CEOs, some of them I had enormous respect for. Some I did not. Some I'd like to have a drink with afterwards. Some I hoped I'd never see again. Some seemed to comport themselves with excellence and honor, and some did not. People are people wherever you go. Any of you can choose to lead or not.